Late last week, President Cyril Ramaphosa signed the political party funding bill into law. It's been sitting on his desk for a long time. I'm not sure why he took... he's had COVID to distract him, so maybe that's a good enough reason why he hasn't signed it into law until a few, 48, 72 hours ago. So it comes into effect in a couple of months' time, and Ebrahim Fakir is on the line now to discuss it with us, political analyst, director of programs at the Orwell Socioeconomic Research Unit. Ebrahim, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, John. Nice chatting to you.
Is there any backward-looking part of this, or does it only apply to funding which is donated once the bill becomes law?
Yeah, I'm afraid, John, it would be nice if it were retrospective. That means that you would have to declare things that you received in the past, but unfortunately that's not the case. So it's not retrospective. It's only henceforth. In part, this might explain why I think it sit on the president's desk for so long. Of course, he's got COVID to distract him and a whole lot of other things, no doubt. But I think they also need a time to, not just get their house in order in the sense that the administrative instruments, the regulatory instruments, the regulations still have to be drafted for this act now. But I think parties wanted time to get their and seal the deal with their donors, so to speak. So I think that in part explains why it took that long. Because look, this, it's in excess of a year. And I can't imagine why, for over a year, one would sit on a piece of legislation like this. Of course, everyone's also welcoming it, but there are some problems with the piece of law, I think.
Okay, but I mean, donors still have a couple of months to shift some money political parties' ways without that having to be declared.
Yeah, they've got till April. So it comes into effect in April. And so the situation will be like we have been used to and accustomed to in the past. We simply won't know who's donated to who. What will happen now, once this is in operation from April henceforth, is that anyone who donates money to a political party, both the party and the donor, has to disclose this. So there's a good transparency mechanism.
Except that it's 100,000 rand is the entry level.
That's the point I was going to make, that there's a threshold. Anything under 100,000 doesn't have to be declared. So it has to be in excess of 100,000. Now, I think you can automatically already see the loophole. Multiple donations.
Five tranches under, of 99,000 rand in cash. Yeah.
Which is why the administrative instruments now need to clarify all of that, and the regulations must clarify that. That's the first problem. The second problem is that there are ways of changing cash into intangible cash, that is goods, services, and so on. Third is, I think there might well be creative accounting in the way in which certain things which are given to a party are written in either the books of a company or business or the recipient, that is the parties, as something else, as T-shirts or as intangible cash, as I'm saying. Fourth is that it can drive some of the stuff underground. So circumvention is a very real problem, and is going to be a very real problem. And John, as you know...
But it's not only, Ebrahim, it's not only a problem in South Africa. United States, America, Great Britain, France, Southeast Asia. There are rules, and those rules are circumvented quite a lot. The Political Action Committees in the United States of America, so for example, what they do is they break down donations which would go above the limit for disclosure into much smaller donations which escape that kind of scrutiny. So we mustn't be too surprised that there's going to be an attempt to evade some of the accountability mechanisms.
No, we mustn't. But look, those societies don't have this kind of compliance problem in a range of other areas. Yeah. So we have a track record, and unfortunately one has to call it that, of non-compliance, the inability to impose sanction, the inability in the first instance to detect wrongdoing. So we've got major problems when it comes to the application of oversight, demanding accountability, and ensuring that there is compliance. So, the IEC has been exceptional at doing its job. But we're talking about money here. And, when it comes to money, the incentive is to ensure that you try and break the rules as much as you possibly can and you get away with it. And here, the likelihood of getting away with it is fairly high. So it's crucial in the next 2 months that the IEC drafts regulations and administrative instruments which try to close as many of these as possible. But as you say, much of that is still likely to happen. There is a caveat out of this, that is public funding, and perhaps that's the new horizon civil society needs to start looking at, because to the extent that we have public funding, the formula is entirely skewed. It's completely wrong.
One of the reasons why some political parties, the DA amongst them, were against this was that it would have the unintended consequence of possibly restricting the funding that they currently get. And I'm not sure that anybody in corporate South Africa is completely beyond sin and omission, but there are certain corporates that generally, I think, are more law-abiding than others, and the big corporates are more scrutinized by boards and by scrutinizing instruments in other ways. And there might now be a reluctance. So look, if I'm going to donate money, I must donate it according to the rules, but I'm not sure if I want to donate money to an opposition political party, because it's going to become public knowledge, and do I want it to become public knowledge? I mean, how much of a threat is that?
A big threat, but it's a big threat not just to opposition parties, it's a big threat to general political parties, and it's a threat to democracy, to the competition aspects, the competitive aspects of democracy. And so it firstly dries up the amount of money which is available for policy development, for outreach, for campaigning, for, you know, all of that kind of stuff is vital and is necessary for parties to do. And so if you don't want to be seen to be donating to one of the opposition parties or a smaller party, and that's where the biggest impact is going to be, on smaller parties who have the potential to become bigger parties, that's where the real impact is, because people are now afraid of doing so, because they're afraid not just of negative perception, but of active victimization. So if a big corporate, for example, is seen to be giving large amounts to the ANC, and there is an infrastructure project or something else in the Western Cape, a DA-administered Western Cape, even though they might be the best fit, they might fear the likelihood that they will be victimized and be precluded from this. And so as I was saying, there is a way out of this, and that is to increase public funding. The problem with public funding is I'm not sure that
we don't have any money.
Exactly. We don't want to pay for them. But also, John, the formula is really bad. It's awful. The formula is direct proportions. So while there's an element of fairness in the question of proportionality, it's obvious that the bigger parties enjoy a bigger slice of this. So clearly something needs to be done about the proportionality aspect of public funding.
But all of these caveats and criticisms and nitpicking that you and I have done, Ebrahim, surely it's better to have the bill than not.
Look, I'm going to disagree that we're not nitpicking. We're raising serious issues of principle. The problem with the transparency approach, while it sounds great on paper and it looks good, and I was an early proponent of this question of transparency earlier, without looking deeper into the questions. And so you've picked up obvious questions. You know, it's not nitpicking to say that money dries out in the system overall.
Poor choice of word then. Let's not focus on that.
No,
let's focus on whether
we
are better off with the bill than without it.
50-50. In part, transparency is good, but the reality is that we know that much of this happens underground, is going to start happening underground, is going to be circumvented, and money dries up in the system. So, you know, those are the major disadvantages. And it's unlikely that anyone who's going to donate, you know, very large amounts is going to want to be seen to be giving to other smaller parties. Look, there have been some very good corporate citizens, for example, Standard Bank and MTN. I'm not saying anything about their services and their products and so on, but they have been among the few, even though when we didn't have this regulation, were prepared to say how much they were prepared to give to who. The way out of this is for people like you in the media, for investigative journalists, for others, to keep close scrutiny if we want this thing to yield the benefits of transparency and sunshine being the disinfectant. If we can look at this closely, then that's where the real thing is going to lie, to keep a real close monitoring of the flows of money.
Ebrahim Fakir, thanks very much for talking to us, a political analyst, director of programs at ASRI, the All Socioeconomic Research Unit.